is to try to cover it. I have 5 pages of notes here in front of me. I'll try to get through it in 45 minutes, but maybe I'll stop at 35 minutes so to leave room for questions or anything. I appreciate everyone being muted just so you don't get all the background noise, but please, if there's anything that's unclear, feel free to unmute and to ask. I just want to make sure we are... the whole point is to clarify things, to make them easier and not to make it more confusing. Obviously, in light of the situation that we find ourselves right now, it's a very different preparation for Pesach. I think we have to realize that this year, we're not looking for any chumras. I'm going to be going through clearly and specifying what's required mi'ikr hadin, and what things are a chumra, and not necessarily required. Certain types of chumras that we might not be following this year, we do not require hataras nedarim. So for example, it's not really the subject for tonight, but I'll just give a quick example. If a person was always careful not to sell chometz gomor, that it would, Cheerios or stuff like that, so then this year, you can sell chometz gomor, it does not require hataras nedarim. But I just want to make it clear. I mean, maybe can everyone unmute for 1 second? I'd like everyone to unmute and repeat the following 4 words after me. Please unmute and repeat these following 4 words. Dirt is not chametz. Could I please hear that from everybody? Dirt is not chametz. 1, 2, 3, go.
Dirt is not chametz.
All right, good. That is our motto. Dirt is not chametz. I got right before we started this year, someone sent me a question. How do I clean my car? And the answer is you clean the car with your eyes and not with a vacuum. If you see chametz, you will get rid of it. But sometimes we add unnecessary levels of stress. Again, any area where food is prepared and eaten, that's a different thing. But if you're cleaning out your kid's toys bin and they touched it with sticky hands, you are not required to wash down every single toy that was in that bin. You look, there was sticky things in it, and you clear that up. Good, so now that we know the dirt is not chametz, there's one other rule. Simchas Yom Tov is a din d'oraisa. We have to make sure we're in a state of simcha throughout Pesach, and oftentimes, because there's so much that goes into the prep, tired, it's long nights, it's hard work, but we're going to make sure that we can have, and I'll be explaining certain leniencies that we're going to rely upon this year to make sure that we're in a place of simcha for the Yom Tov. So I want to just begin by talking about the rule in kashrus, and what we're doing is kashrus in the kitchen, the rules, the way that the non-kosher taste went in, that's the same level we need to use to get it out. That's in halacha, it's called kibolo kach polto. That means the way it was swallowed is the way it spits it back up. So the way that the non-kosher, or the chametz in our case, we're not talking, milking's inflation, we're talking about getting chametz out, the way the chametz went in, we have to do that same level to get it out. So the highest level is something called libun gomer. That's the modern-day equivalent, that'd be like using a blowtorch. Please, unless you are professionally trained, do not use a blowtorch for anything. We're not going to be doing that year. That is on the books and is brought down, but we're not going to be doing these type of things. I'll explain other methods. There's something called hagala, where you take a boiling pot of water and you will put things into that boiling pot of water. That also could be done at home. It's not extremely dangerous, but don't ask, if long as you're careful, we could do hagala in our own kitchens. Another way to kosher is doing what's called irui kli rishon, where you have something from a hot, maybe boiled a pot of water, and you're going to pour it onto something. That would also kosher surfaces. And the last thing is called libun kal. That would be like an example of running like a self-clean cycle or in running at the hottest temperature. So as I'm going to be referring to these different things as we go through them, I just want to go in sort of, I guess, order of appliances. We'll start with the oven, because that's probably the first thing that's on everyone's minds for the cooking. How am I going to use my year-round oven for Pesach? So there's two types. The one oven, there's the self-cleaning oven. So for a self-cleaning oven, there are 2 steps you have to do. The first thing to do for a self-cleaning oven is you remove any food you see. If there's stuff on the walls, you clean that out. And then with the oven racks in place, then you just run the cycle. And that is it. That is I didn't check, but my source is telling me that it gets close to like 800 degrees in a self-cleaning cycle. That's the halakha equivalent of a blowtorch. So we're good to go. Well, that's not true? My wife corrects me. It doesn't get that hot. Okay?
Arcus to 500.
No, on a self-cleaning cycle.
Right?
Okay, it works. Regardless of the temperatures, that if that's a self-cleaning cycle, good. What about a non-self-cleaning cycle? So for this, you have to clean... Okay, the question is made if people could just mute the phone. And then, you guys, if there's any questions, please unmute, but just so we don't get all the background noise. Thank you. So for the non-self-cleaning ovens, so you have to... Okay. You have to clean all the surfaces with like Easy Off or something like that. Make sure like there's parts of like the oven, the door, the thermostat, and the edges. Anything that's like black discoloration, that's like if it's as long as it's not, if it's flush with the surface, that's fine. That's not a problem. And the oven shouldn't be used for 24 hours. In halacha, once something has not been used for 24 hours, then we're dealing with a concept called nosein tam lefgam, and it gives off a bad taste, and that helps us in terms of the koshering process. So then you're going to put the oven, the racks back in the oven. You turn it to broil. Broil is the highest heat setting on an oven for 1 hour. And once you do that, then you are good to go, and your oven is fine. Some have a chumrah, but we're not going to do it this year. Some have a chumrah where they'll take special aluminum foil, and there's a special aluminum tape you can get like at the hardware stores, and they will tape closing the lid of the oven, because that surface actually does not get hot in the self-cleaning in the cycle. The oven door that drops down doesn't get hot enough, but you do not need to cover that. It's a chumrah, but me'ikar hadin, one is not required to do that. The broiler pans, it's too risky. The broiler pans, we're not gonna kosher for Pesach. It comes direct contact. It should be covered. Put like aluminum foil or something on that on the broiler pan, and that's good enough. So for the warming drawers. So what about the warming drawers? So I have the Pesach here from Rabbi Willig. Rabbi Willig said that by the warming drawer, he holds that the metal can be koshered. The plastic also, he says, just warm it to the highest temperature and then line the bottom of it with an aluminum foil. Again, put it to the highest temperature and then line the bottom with an aluminum foil. That would work for a warming drawer. But please, again, some people like to use the blow torches. We're not doing any of that. I don't recommend that in a regular year. Certainly not in a year like that. So that's basically the two types of ovens and the warming drawers and the broiler pan. Are there any questions on ovens per se before we move on to my next topic? I want to use like the stoves.
How long do you do the highest temperature in the warming drawer for?
An hour. So an hour, yeah. Yeah, Mikey, question?
Yeah, so on the oven door, the border that doesn't get hot, you have to clean that also?
Should be cleaned, that's it.
And then you just cover it up, or you don't have to cover it
up. Some have a chumra to cover it, but it's hard because you have to buy this special type of aluminum tape that can hold the covering on it. It's not just like, regular tape will not work, it falls apart in the heat. So you do not need to do that. Just be careful, obviously, not to put, when you're taking paste into pans out of the oven, not to put them down on that surface. Shouldn't touch the surface. Yeah? Okay. We're good? Okay, so let's go on to my next thing is stoves. And we'll start with an electric stovetop. So an electric stovetop, you had to clean it well and cover it with foil, and you're going to turn on the burners until they get red. Red hot. For a gas stovetop, you got to clean them off, the surface and the grates, and we're going to use what's called a cold hold. You're not going to use them for 24 hours at all. Then you're going to cover the stovetop with foil. And now some people have actually Pesach grates that they do that. If you have ones that you use and you replace them in, then that's fine. You don't need to kosh them. If you're using your same year-round ones, so you have two options. One option is to you could put them in the oven. When you have them in the oven, your oven up at 550 for an hour, some people will just put them in the oven at that time. That's fine, but there's like an aesthetic problem that they'll start to change color a little bit. So some people are concerned, they want their fancy looking grates, so they won't want to put them in the oven. If either the material, we have what's called, I forget the fancy name for it, it's a treated type of metal, so therefore there really is getting quote-unquote white hot, but the white doesn't show on the metal itself. There's a name for that, I'm blanking on it. So you could either put them into the oven on the self-cleaning cycle, the grates, and you're done, you just take them out afterwards and that, or you could invert them, so to speak, and turn on the flame and have them on for about 20 minutes, maybe a half hour would be fine for that, for the grates on the for the gas stovetop. Those are the two ways of kosher. Again, either if you have year-round ones you use every year, that's not a problem. If you want to kosher them, send either putting them in the self-clean cycle or to flip them upside down, have them on the highest heat for about the 20 to 30 minutes. Okay.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Rabbi Jaffe?
Yeah.
It's Miriam Groves. If I could just make one comment.
Sure.
I, from personal experience, when you put the grates into the oven and turn the oven on the highest temperature, it changes the heat distribution inside the oven, and it can invalidate a warranty if you ruin the oven that way, because it changes the way that it actually, the grates retain the heat in a different way than the average oven grates do.
Oh, yeah?
And you can ruin your oven.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay. Oh, interesting. So then we should not do that then. We shouldn't do that. Yeah, very good. So then just invert them. Put them on the, keep them turn them upside down and just put it on top of the burner for 20 minutes, half hour. Okay. Glass stovetop. So glass cannot be koshered. Glass, it's a three-way machlokas glass in general, whether it's totally good or it's totally no good or it's somewhere in between. But we hold for Pesach, we do not kosher the glass stovetops. So what are you going to do? You have to clean it very well, the surface of a glass stovetop. Don't use it within 24 hours. And then you should have something underneath any time you're going to be using that. So you put like two pieces of aluminum or something on top of the glass top, and then you can cook your food on that using it for thing. Now, but one thing, you should not cover the entire glass surface. It could crack that way. That will definitely invalidate your warranty if you cover the entire glass surface. So you cover part of it, again, underneath where you're putting your pots that you're using, but it cannot really be koshered. So you just clean it, don't use it for 24 hours, and don't, on Pesach, put anything directly on top of the glass surface. Two other issues, I guess, just about the stovetops. You do not need to kosher the hood or the exhaust that goes above the stove. That does not need to be koshered for Pesach. So people have asked that question, but it does not need to be done. Okay.
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
Regarding putting the grates in the self-cleaning oven, I'm assuming it's just the grates, not the, I don't know what the name is, the piece that's actually on the fire itself?
Correct. Those don't need to be, those just need to be wiped down, actually. The round circle, the discs, yeah, I don't know the technical term for it. Those do not need to be, because the food never touches them. Food never touches those parts, so basically all you can do is just wipe them off, and then you're fine.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to sinks. Now the next area. Okay, we did. What did we do so far? We did the ovens. We did the stovetops. Now we'll do the different types of sinks. So a stainless steel sink. So you have to take the drain out and remove that. It's best to get a new drain for Pesach if you can. If you can't, then if as long as big enough holes you could basically scrub it out and clean it, then that's going to be fine. And then we're going to do what's called a Eroi. How do you kosher it? So we're going to use a cold hold. What do I mean by that? For 24 hours, we're not going to use any hot water in the sink. Cold water is fine. It's best. You could just get confused, like I'm nervous about, you know, because you might forget and turn the cold, and it's a little too cold, so I want to add it up a little bit. But you could really, really, by the letter of the law, use cold water during that 24-hour period, but for sure no hot water. So after you have the cold hold, you've only used it for cold for 24 hours, so you're going to, what's that? Question? Okay, we've cleaned it out, we have the cold hold, so now we have what's called Eroi. You're going to take hot water, boiling hot water, and pour it over the areas of the stainless steel sink. And that's any part that touched it, because again, this is not really a cooking surface, so we don't need to get to these high levels of heat, but the only thing, what could have touched it, you're making spaghetti, you're making pasta, and things could have been hot, boiling hot, and put into the sink, so we have to put boiling hot water back into the sink to take out the chametz. That's for the stainless steel sink. A ceramic sink cannot be koshered. You can't kosher ceramic. It belongs to a different category, so therefore you have to clean it, and we cover it. For a ceramic sink, we'll do the same thing. We're not using it, have that cold hold for 24 hours. You take out the sink drain. What you could do, again, you could clean it out. You could do the iroi on the drain itself. What the best thing to do is for a ceramic sink is to clean it out, make sure it's dry, and then they can cover it with like a foil, like a contact. They have water-resistant foil you can cover the ceramic sink, and then to use like an insert, to use something on Pesach, just that way it won't be a problem. But for ceramic sinks, we cannot kosher the material itself. Sink faucets. So those should be koshered as well. The way to kosher a sink faucet, and again, when we're talking about these boiling hot waters, if there's little kids at home, this should be done late at night when they are asleep. They should not be awake or moving around, because really we're dealing with literally boiling hot water. So if there's no kids in the house, do it whenever you want. If you're doing it with little kids at home, please wait till they're sleeping and they're not awake and there's no problems. Because first of all, it splashes all over. You should put towels on the floor. But for the sink faucets, what we're going to do is pour boiling hot water over the nozzles, over the faucets for the instant hot if you have that. We're going to detach any filters you have in the sink. Those should be, if possible, replaced for Pesach, because sometimes you're taking like the hot bowl of spaghetti or something, and it goes right up into the nozzle. So there could be a real chametz then. If you can't replace it, so then we'll do Irui. We'll take out the nozzle, clean it up, don't use it for 24 hours, and then pour the boiling hot water on that, and that would kosher it as well. So that would be... there is also a concept, sometimes it's hard to pour if you have one of those type of, I don't know how to describe, like a U-shaped sink, faucet, so you'll take the boiling hot water and you will lift the pot up, and so to speak, instead of dipping it in there, you're bringing the pot up to the faucet in order to kosher it that way. That needs to be done as well, because there's a lot of hot comments that finds a way of getting in that area.
What about the top of the U?
What's that?
The top of the U.
Yeah, the top of you, you just pour over. Anything you can pour over, we have questions from in-house as well. What?
The underside,
you pour, you lift the hot water up.
But won't the thing
get
in the way?
No, it's not fun. Okay. Let's go to countertops. Questions on countertops. Ceramic. So the ceramic can't be kosher, just like the ceramic sink couldn't be. The ceramic countertop could not be. I have a whole list. I found like 15 different types of brand names and what exactly halakhic category they belong to. So if you're not sure what material your countertop is, you could ask me and I'll help try to look it up with you. So ceramic cannot be koshered. Let me tell you like this. This year we're trying to do what is easiest. And I was speaking to someone earlier. If it's easier to cover the countertops, just cover the countertops. Do not worry about koshering it. It's a chumrah. Me'ikar hadin, they do not need to be koshered for Pesach because they're not cooking surfaces. There's no real heat. At most, you took something off the fire and put it directly onto your countertop. Okay, so if you cover it, then that takes away any concern of putting the chametz getting onto your Pesach dishes. So that's really, if it's easier, they sell it at some of the supermarkets or whatever, it will have these like plastic... covers you could use for that. That's the easiest thing to do. What's that? I need a question. Okay, I would recommend that. I think we should not be koshering the countertops this year. But again, if you want to, so then the way to do it is to do it with the Irui as well. So formica is actually plastic. There is a machlokis in the poskim whether you can kosher plastic for Pesach. This year, you can kosher plastic for Pesach. Now, I'll speak out in a few minutes what other things. That'll have a ramification with microwaves. That will have ramifications with dishwashers, with Keurig machines. So we could kosher plastic some whole other year, but certainly this year, in light of the current situation we're in, the post-gamer say you could definitely, or Willig, others point out you could definitely kosher plastic this year. So if you have a formica countertop, and previous years you might have felt, oh, I don't want to kosher it, you could kosher it. How are we going to do that? So I'm going to give you the straightforward way, and then if you have this already at home, you could do it, but if you don't have it, do not make yourself crazy and go out and buy the following. The straightforward way of doing it is with Irui, which means you're going to boil a pot of water or a kettle, and you're just going to take that boiling hot water and pour it onto the areas of the countertop. It has to be boiling hot. If it cools off, you get about 15, 20 seconds of it being off the fire before it stops getting hot. Some people have a good chop. They have like, I think it's called the kumkum, but it has the little heater on the side of it, and it plugs in. That does not cool down. So that, if you have one of those, you can just use that and basically go up and down and get all the areas. Again, only do this at night when the kids are sleeping. It's dangerous. This is really hot, boiling hot water. Put towels on the floor, obviously, just to get the overspill, and that's it. That will kosher your countertops. There is something that I heard from Rabbi Drucker years ago. He had a good eitza. There's something you could take, like a long lead pipe, 12 inches, 14 inches, and you put a hanger through it. And if you heat that up and you have the hot water, then that will act like a swath. You could basically just pour the hot water in and just roll over it with that. This is what they do in like industrial kitchens when they need to kosher large areas, like a huge restaurant or something like that. They'll use that method because it's too hard to go piece by piece. I was told, I didn't see this, but I was told on the social media, on the web, people are discussing about using a steamer. Can you use a steamer for koshering your countertops? This is what happens when your shirt is wrinkled and your wife says, you can't go out of the house like that. You need to get the wrinkles out of your shirt. This is for taking out wrinkles. This is not for koshering your countertops. Those steamers that they talk about are industrial ones that are used in real kitchens. This is not your homemade steamer, anti-wrinkle, anti-whatever it is. Do not use those. It doesn't accomplish anything. The Rav Yecheskel Orbach, Shlita from Lakewood, pointed out that you do not get the required amount of coverage that you need to. It does not have the power to do it. So it's a nice idea, but unfortunately, you don't need to. You can cover the countertops and get through it much easier. Granite, quartz, different types of other stones, those can all be koshered if you would so choose to. But again, my recommendation this year is not to do that, just to cover the countertops with one of those hard plastics you can get in the stores, and it makes it much easier. Some people, they have their like pre-cut ones every year. They just take it out, and they have this section, they line it up, and it's taped down, and you're good to go. Okay, before I go to the next topic, are there any questions just on the countertops? We're good? Yeah, okay.
You clean them first, presumably?
Yeah. They should be clean, just wipe down. But you don't need a cold hold on them. You just as soon as they're cleaned, you could go ahead and cash them or cover them.
Backsplashes for the countertops.
Do not need to do the backsplashes. Backsplashes do not need to be covered. It's some people ask about the lip, right? When you have your countertop and then that little part that goes down. Pots don't really touch that part as well. This is all a chumrah, and we're not looking for chumras this year.
What about the backsplash on the oven?
The backsplash oven should be covered with foil. You can put foil over that. Some people like to cut out so you can still see the dial and you know what time it is, and you can get to your buttons. But those could have splash. Those don't need to be koshered, but you can just cover that, whatever it is, clean it with your spray, and then just cover it with a aluminum foil.
Even the wall, let's say, behind it also, like, if there's any room above it, like behind it?
Not necessary.
Okay.
Not necessary.
Does it have to be double covered or just one layer is fine?
One layer is fine. You use like a thick aluminum so it's not going to tear, right? They have like different...
Heavy duty,
that's what I meant. Yeah, the heavy duty. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Microwaves. Some people just have a Kosher Pesach microwave, and they put it away with their dishes, and they just bring that out and get a little small thing, and they can use it. That's fine. That's great. You can kosher a microwave for Pesach. The way you do it, it's really not so complex. What you do is as follows. I get this question a lot. Also, people are weighing on business. They want to kosher the microwave in their hotel room. So this is a year-round chop as well. What happens is as follows. You clean the whole thing out, so there's nothing on it. If there is a glass plate in the microwave that has to be taken out, you cannot use your year-round glass plate for Pesach. That has to be removed. You could put a. Some people want, again, if they have like a plate they use for their Pesach dishes, they put that into their microwave. But what you do is as follows: you remove the year-round glass plate that's at the bottom. You a cold hold for 24 hours as well. Once it's been totally cleaned and you have the cold hold. You take a glass, a cup, a styrofoam cup, and you fill it up with water, and you put it on 10 minutes. For 10 minutes, that 10 minutes is going to steam up the entire microwave, and it's going to kosher the entire microwave except for one spot. Can you figure out what the one spot that's not yet kosher in the microwave? Audience participation. What's the one part?
Under the cup.
Right, right. That one spot that's under the cup. So here's what you do. You put it in for 10 minutes. The whole oven's steamed up. You take the cup and you move it over 6 inches. And then you do the entire process again. You've spilled the water, whatever, new water, 10 minutes. And then you've steamed up. Now your microwave is kosher lePesach. That again, this relies upon the sheet that you can kosher.
Does this work for convection ovens also, like microwave convection ovens?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I can look into that and let you know. I don't know off the top of my head if that works for a microwave convection oven, because I think the cooking process is a little bit different than your standard microwave oven, correct?
Well, you can use it as a microwave and also an oven, so I guess it's different.
Yeah, I'd have to check on that, but I can look into it and let you know. Just remind me. I'll give you my number. You can call me afterwards, and I can look at that. Okay. Dishwashers. Let me move on to dishwashers for a second. So it's a little bit complicated because you can't kosher porcelain, right? With metal, right, you could kosher. The plastic you could kosher. So you have to clean out any chametz that's on the bottom of the dishwasher, and you make sure it's completely clean. If the dishwasher racks are not cracked, then you can kosher them. You do two cycles on your dishwasher. The first cycle, again, it's already been cleaned out, cold hold for 24 hours. The first cycle is going to be put in extra soap. Put in more. That's going to make it no same time of gum. Put in a little bit more than you would normally. Don't overload it, but a little bit extra. And just run a cycle with nothing in it. Then run a second cycle completely clean with no soap. And after that, then your dishwasher will be good to go. Let me talk about for about 5 more minutes or so a few things, and then if there's any questions, I'll try to answer those as well. Electric mixers. So for Pesach, for your electric mixers, so it's hard to clean it because there's little small pieces of flour that get in. So you shouldn't use a year-round mixer for Pesach. It's too difficult to clean. The blades, though, you could do it through boiling. If you have your boiling hot water, and you put the blades in there, as long as you take it out and you put the next one in, then that's fine. That would work to kosher the blades for it, but the actual mixer itself should be a different one. Fabric items like tablecloths, aprons, those can be used. What you should do if you want to use any clean, to kosher any quote-unquote fabric, what you're going to do is to clean it off, and you're going to put it into the hot cycle of a dishwasher, not dishwasher, a washing machine. Okay, confused. A washing machine, right? You put it on the hot, run it through one cycle, and then look when it comes out. If it's clean and there's no food particles on it, then that's fine. You can use your tablecloths from year-round. You could use your Shabbos tablecloths. You want to clean them up and use them for Pesach, that is fine. Any fabrics, maybe I'm blanking other materials, but like for aprons people like to use, or tablecloths, that would work. What?
Oven mitts,
yes, good. Oven mitts could be used for cleaning it this way, those would work. The refrigerator, freezers, pantry shelves. So these just basically need to be, cleaned. But make sure for little places where crumbs could get trapped. If for whatever reason you see crumbs and they're just inaccessible, this is a very easy way to nullify that. You take a bottle of 409 cleanser, whatever it is. Is that right? No, my wife's laughing at me. Whatever the cleansing... I don't clean, I don't know. But whatever the cleansing agent would be, you spritz it. And then that does it. That makes it nifsal me'achilas kelev. So even if you could see the little crumbs, the little Cheerios, it's stuck behind the oven, I can't get to it, it's not a problem. That makes it fine. High chairs, right, for the babies, you wipe it down with a soapy rag, and you cover the tray with contact paper, and then that's fine. Because obviously little kids, we don't put burning hot food on their... on their trays, even if it was a little bit warm, so the contact paper will be sufficient enough to prevent any chametz. Yeah, Mikey?
So rubber oven mitts, where there's not really a cloth material.
Ooh, rubber. So Ramosha has a tshuva where he says we can kosher rubber. He says, really, the way that the rubber is made is through wood. And the Mishnah says that the eitz, wood, is a type of material that can be koshered. And he writes, or Moshe says, even though they add like chemicals into the wood to make it into rubber, he still holds you can kosher that. So if you want to use the rubber gloves, you could kosher them. If they're washing machine safe, do that. If not, you can just pour the hot water over them. But those could be, as long as they're scrubbed down and clean, you're good to go on those as well. Yeah? Okay.
One question?
Sure.
When you're talking about spritzing something into a surface, a small place where you can't get the crumbs?
Yeah.
Does it have to be a bleach or it could be any cleanser?
Any cleanser. Any one of these, I don't even know the name brands. My wife's gonna be fantastic, my wife says. Mr. Clean, my wife says. She didn't say I'm Mr. Clean, she said use this cleaning agent called Mr. Clean. But it does not have to have a bleach. It does not, any one of these things would classify it into the realm of what's called Nifsal Me'achilas Kelab. A dog wouldn't eat it. And even if you have some crazy dog that would eat it, you can't bring a proof from one crazy dog. Most dogs would not eat something that's been spritzed, and therefore that is sufficient. In halacha, we're not concerned with crumbs. We're only concerned with kazayas. Yeah?
One other question. For the refrigerator, if you have like a glass tray that has like, I don't know, the white thing around it, do you have to take out the glass from the base, I guess you call it, of each shelf, or just...
You mean to see if there's any crumbs in between?
Stan, when you're cleaning the refrigerator shelves,
yeah,
it's a glass, and then there's like that white, I don't know, surrounding part of it.
Right, you should take that out. Yeah, you should take that out and clean it just again with the soapy rag or something like that or whatever. You're cleaning it and just do that. And then they recommend lining it. But again, I don't know the science behind it, but I was told you have to poke holes in the aluminum foil because if there's no holes, it hurts the circulation within the refrigerator itself. So whatever you are lining the refrigerator shelves with, they should be poke small holes in like the aluminum foil or what have you to help with that.
Wait, Rabbi Jesse?
Yeah.
1 minute. I'm sorry. Could you just repeat that again about how many cycles do you have to do?
On the dishwasher? Tablecloth? Tablecloth is one. Tablecloth, you're going to clean it off before, and if you see any crumbs, just shake it out. And then you're going to put it into the hottest temperature you can in the washing machine. Check once it came out of the washing, just look it over, make sure there's no food or anything on it, and that's it. That is now usable for Pesach. No. Okay, for a table, just in general, a table should be cleaned very well, and you're going to cover the table with two layers, right? One of those should preferably be water resistant, like something out of plastic. That would be for the table. Okay. Let me try to do. I'll do maybe a few more things in 2 minutes, and then if I can ask any questions, water coolers. So a water cooler. So you pour boiling hot water over the tap for 10 seconds and then just replace the water bottle, the Poland Spring, whatever brand you use, and that's it. Then it's koshered. You're fine to use that for Pesach. You could use your year-round one with that as well. What else? I'm looking over a few things. You know, I think I covered most of the main points that I wanted to do. Oh, a hot water urn. Let me just cover the hot water urn. So if the hot water urn is only used for hot water, that's it. You don't warm anything up like, you know, on Shabbos morning, you put stuff on top of your urn. So if it's only used for hot water, then it's the same thing as like the water. You just put the boiling hot water over the tap for 10 seconds, and then you're fine. If you do put food items on top of your urn, that should not be used for Pesach. It's too complicated, so just either get a new one or I don't know, it's Yom Tov, so you can cook up hot water in a kettle. You won't get a hot coffee on Shabbos, Chalamoid. Okay, what can I tell you? But if you do put chametz on top of a hot water urn, that should not be used for Pesach.
Rabbi, the urn, does it matter what kind of... I assume plastic, however the urn is made, is fine. Meaning it doesn't have to be stainless steel, so to speak.
No, it doesn't have to be. But the question is really what do you put on top of the urn? If it's only used for hot water, then just pour the water over the nozzle for 10 seconds. Boiling hot water for 10 seconds, that's fine. If you do, like, we put the challahs on, we put the kugels and stuff on top of the urn to warm up, so that should not be, those type of things should not be used on Pesach.
So you would pour over the urn?
Over the dispenser.
Over the
dispenser.
Right.
10 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think those are most of the key points. Are there any questions or just clarifications that we talked about tonight?
The counter, you know, where you said you could use the hard plastic if you had from year to year. What if you didn't remember which side was down from year to year? Is that still okay? Is either side okay, or does it need to be the same side that was down the prior year?
Ideally, it should be the same side. But at the end of the day, it probably would not make a difference. If maybe you could try, you know, moving forward, just make like a little mark on the dunce, like to put this the downside or something of it. Just mark it up or some write yourself on pen on the bottom of it, because obviously you wouldn't want that you wouldn't want the marker on the side that you're using. But I don't think if you did not mark it previously years, it should not be a problem, because we're dealing with at most a kli rishon shehusar al ha'esh, and that would not be a problem for the countertop cover. Yeah. Right, because you're not cooking on it. It's a kli rishon shehusar min ha'esh is the worst possible scenario it could have been. Or eli kli rishon. Yeah. Yeah, my...
So a couple of questions. So let's say the walls of the kitchen, the floors of the kitchen, the surfaces of things, that there's no clear chametz on them, right? There's not like you can't recognize anything. That we clean that, don't worry about it. That's not relevant.
Right. We're worried about chametz. We're not worried about dirt. This is not a problem. Right. Sometimes though, chametz could get onto certain things. It sounds silly, but like check the phone that you talk on, your house phone. Like, right? It could be that, you know, schmutz got onto that. Especially if you have little kids, they could put stuff on there. So you have to look over areas. But these are the things we're concerned about, but not dirt. Dirt and dust, these are... Some people, I feel like, this is the time I do my spring cleaning. This is not the year for spring cleaning. This is the year for just making sure we get done what we need to do.
What if during Pesach, you know, you drop food on the floor, and that, you know, it's within the 5 second rule, so you're going to eat it off the floor, let's say. Should you not? Because maybe, I mean, like, in terms of whether there's comments on the floor, like, how do you, or if kids, let's say, kids will certainly eat within 5 seconds.
Well, why did you limit it to five? Matzahs are 18 minutes. You can make like an 18 minute rule on the floor. It's not a problem. Again, I'm not a hygienist, so I don't know what the halachas are of eating off of floors. But in Alpi halacha, it did not become chametz day because your brownie, your latke, your whatever, your matzah ball hit the floor. That does not make it chametz. So if you want to eat it after it hit the floor, I won't tell anybody. But it's not a halachic issue. It's a personality. It's not a halachic issue. Okay. People have asked. Sure.
Sorry, going back to the stove. Do you mind repeating what you said about cleaning, kashering grates if you don't put them in a self-cleaning oven?
Okay, so you're going to clean the grates very well, not use it for 24 hours. Then you're going to invert them so the grates are upside down, and you're going to have it on the highest setting for about 20 minutes to a half hour. That'll kasher it. It's equal. No preference. The only preference in terms of convenience. If you're doing a self-cleaning oven, you're not worried about it, you can put them in. But we learned tonight that could actually harm the oven, so we won't want to do that. If you're not cleaning your oven, you don't have to go find a neighbor to put your grates in. You can just invert them and hold them over the flame for highest temperature, about 20 minutes to a half hour, and then that would totally kosher them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Questions have been asked already about toothpaste, about mouthwash. These are fine. It's machlokas in the poskim. If you want to be, Colgate is, they say, is like the best of the brands, but really, any one of these, Listerine, the Scope, the mouthwashes, they are fine. I'm following the psak from Marenu Harav Herschel Shechter Shlita that one is allowed to use these things. They do not require special certification, but people like to go, okay, it's fine, but I'm telling you, this is not the year for chumras. All the mouthwashes and all the toothpaste Those are fine. Rav Willig actually spoke out this year. You don't need new toothbrushes. He had a lot of leniencies in this area as well. So if you have any specific questions, I know people ask me about medicines and about pills and about vitamins. So any pill that is made to be swallowed is fine on Pesach. I'm going to repeat that because people look up a list. Any pill that is made to be swallowed, it's not a problem with achshavei. We hold that it is mutter, and you should be taking them, especially if they're like heart medicine or any one of these things. They should be taken. What are the things we have to avoid? So you look, if your kids have these Flintstone chewables with a wheat ingredient, yeah, that should be put away or thrown out. But anything that's a real pill that's meant to be swallowed is 100% fine to have on Pesach. Right.
Does that go for vitamins as well that a doctor has advised you to take, but it's not as crucial as like a medicine?
No. So vitamins that the doctor said we can check the ingredients on, but vitamins are a little bit different. You know, if someone's nagging their spouse, you really should be taking these vitamins, and better not to. Prenatal vitamins should be taken. Other types of vitamins that are essential should be taken. If it's not so essential and they could be chewed, that would be a different issue. But any pill or even a vitamin that's meant to be manufactured to be swallowed is not a problem. It should be taken. If these are, you know, if you're a healthy person, right? And then, you know, these your spouse is nagging, you know, take your vitamin B, take your vitamin D. Okay, for 8 days you don't have to. But for neonatal, any one of these things that's for medicine should be taken. On Pesach. Okay.
You have to cover your refrigerator shelves?
It's better to. Not required. As long as they're clean, that's fine. But people like to just put even paper towel. That's it. They tear paper towels and put them underneath. But again, if you're using aluminum foil, one should try to puncture holes in the aluminum foil. In order to help the circulation of the air within the refrigerator. That's what I was told to advise.
If you want to use your freezer to sell, you know, put some items that you're selling to the goy in the same freezer that you want to use for Pesach, can you go through how that's possible to do?
Okay, so anything that's going to be sold should be clearly marked as chametz. Right, that's off limits, that you're not going to use it. If you have a special section of the freezer, if you can put them into a box or something like that, and just on the side, and that way you'll know that's not mine. You know, this year no one's going away, but it used to be like if someone was going away, so everyone put their ketchup and their mayonnaise and their in that person's fridge and would just stay there. If you're keeping things in your refrigerator that are not going to be used, so just have them clearly labeled and pushed to the side, and that will be sold within your mechiras chametz. That's what you do. Same thing for a freezer and refrigerator in that regard.
You need to put in like some sort of cardboard mechitza or a separate
shelf. It would be a good idea if you had some sort of physical separation between that. That would be good. Like a small box, you put in a plastic bag, some way it's clearly labeled. I'll give you another example. This isn't really a food issue, but like people have chametz kalim in their brake front. So are you allowed to have those? So those should just be, you should have it, you could see them, but you should have it sealed off, taped, or put a little string around it, right, you know, chametz, so you don't accidentally, oh, you know, we're creatures of habit. See, oh, I need a kiddush cup, so, oh, go grab one from the brake front. So anything that's like chametz came that's there should be clearly labeled that it's off limits. That's by the freezer, the refrigerator, by the brake front. Those are the type of things. I just want to end. I realize now we're having a few coming in because we have an 8:30. We learn a little bit. You're welcome to stay on the call if you want to learn with us a little bit. But I had a few questions, and apparently it's been quite a buzz on the social media starting yesterday, maybe the day before. This psak that came out about Zoom having a Zoom Seder. So I want to be very, very clear on this and not come across as too harif. But I'm going to begin by quoting the words of the chief. There were 14 Sephardic rabbis who permitted to have a Zoom Seder in Eretz Yisrael. So the chief rabbi, the chief Ashkenazic rabbi, Rabbi Lau, said, this is extremely irresponsible. It was irresponsible to give this type of psak because people don't realize what exactly the nature of it is. The psak that was given, and this year as well by Rav Schechter, is referring to a very, very select situation. It's not referring to a neighbor or a cousin or Bubby who's going to be away this year, not going to join us for the Seder. The psak that was given for people when it's a question of pikuach nefesh, when there's a question of chas v'shalom, the person who's all by themselves might harm themselves, whether it's depression, whether it's borderline personality disorder, where there's a concern for human life, just like we would get in the car and drive to that house, we would be allow them to turn on a Zoom before Yom Tov and keep it on so that this person who's in danger of taking their life would not feel isolated. That was the context, and that's the only context. And of course, for Pikuach Nefesh, you'll eat non-kosher, you'll drive on Shabbos, we'll do anything, so we'll turn a Zoom on before Shabbos or to minimize it. But I was talking about, first of all, in Eretz Yisrael, where it's one day Yom Tov, so they're going to turn it on Wednesday afternoon, have it on for their one-day Yom Tov, turn it off on Chol HaMoed. In America, that's not a het there. The people should not rely upon this. This is very, very irresponsible for people just to think, oh, I heard you're allowed to have a Zoom Seder, the rabbis allowed it. It's not allowed. It's a question of pikuach nefesh, of saving someone's life, that they gave a heter for this. But this can be very, very slippery slope. If people would take this and run with it, like the conservatives allowed people to drive to shul on Shabbos because they felt it was going to increase things, if people take this Zoom heter out of the one limited case it was applied to, it's very dangerous. So there is no room for a Zoom Seder. If there is, chas v'shalom, a serious mental health concern, that's a different question. We could talk about that. But to think is the default value that Zoom Seders are allowed this year, that is 100% not true. I just wanted to publicly speak about that, so try to clear it, because a lot of these, online and in discussions, everyone's like, oh, we're not going to get together. Okay, so we'll make a Zoom Seder and we'll be just like old times. No, I'm sorry. This is the year that we're going to have to, Nebuch, we're going to have to spend it with our own families. We're going to be together. We're going to have an amazing Seder. It's going to be a smaller Seder. It's going to be a Seder where we're going to be able to connect to our kids and our immediate family members and have a meaningful Seder this year. Okay. If, for whatever reason, a person finds themselves where they don't have a place to go for a Seder, so please be in touch with me and we'll try to work something out. But in terms of having a Zoom, unfortunately, that is not a halachic option at all. Okay, thank you, everybody. If you have any follow-up questions, please feel free to email me, call me for the for more Pesach questions. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. You can reach out to me and I'll do my best to get you an answer in a timely manner. I appreciate those who are joining us now for 8:30 learning, which we've been having each week. So let me just pull out the sefer I want to continue with. We've been learning about Hilchos Brachos. One of the recommendations that Rav Asher Weiss made on Sunday was to strengthen ourselves in the realm of 100 brachos a day. And last night, we were learning from the introduction of the sefer Achinuch. One second, what? Oh, hold on, okay. Go, quick. Excuse me. Sefer HaChinuch was saying that the idea behind the bracha is that we recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of a bracha. And he doesn't want to give us freebies. He wants us to earn goodness in our lives. And the way that we make ourselves available to earn that goodness is to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who is the source. So we do that 100 times a day. That helps us to strengthen ourselves in that way. So what do we mean when we say the bracha Baruch? So first of all, it's Hashem is the source of all blessings. That everything in our life is coming through Hashem. Baruch comes from the Hebrew word is a brecha, is like a pool. It means the source of all blessings. So we're acknowledging Hashem is the source of that. And then we say Atah. Atah is a direct, it's not a third person. Atah is you. So when we should, already by the second word of a bracha, we're saying, Baruch, the source of all blessing, is you. I'm talking directly to Hashem. And many times we just, go on a second. Many times we just go on reciting brachas. We don't realize that we're talking to a living being, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a sad story, but it brings out a very powerful point. That there was a Rav in Baltimore, and it was a Sunday morning. He was walking down the street, and he saw one of his balabatima, a frum lady in the community, was walking out of a church on a Sunday morning. And she was so embarrassed. There's the Rav, and he's looking at her, and she's looking at him, and he says, what's going on over here? So she's embarrassed, but she says, Rabbi, I got to tell you something. At the church, they have this thing called confession. How does it work? So you go into one booth, and the priest goes into the next booth, and you tell him everything you did wrong. And he looked at this lady, said to her, look, we had the same thing. We talk, we have a conversation. So the woman said, no, this time there's actually somebody there who's listening. Oh, so it's so sad, but Nebuch, this lady had been davening her whole life, and she never believed that someone was actually listening to her. The point of making a bracha, saying Baruch Atah, is that Hashem, you are right here. You're not far away, you're right here in front of me. The second word of the bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, is Yud-Ke, Vav-Ke. So we pronounce it as Adoshem, but it means we should be thinking about every time we say the name Yud-Ke, Vav-Ke, Hashem was, Hashem is, and Hashem will be. So that's a pause for consideration every time we make the bracha. When we talk about the word Elokeinu, Hashem is our God, the proper kavan is to have the Hashem is all-powerful. And that message has been made painfully true, stark recollections, a reminder over the last few weeks how Hashem is in control of everything. And with all the advances, with all the developments that we've made, we realize we have to fold our hands and say, Hashem is in control. Hashem is all-powerful, and whatever Hashem wants to happen is going to happen. I was trying to research and find out how did the whole coronavirus start. And you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it started by a man in China who, they say, ate a bat. And the bat apparently had eaten a fly that had this virus. So from one small event of this fly that was swallowed by a bat that some individual ate, right now 3 billion people, as of currently, today, 3 billion people are at home. It's amazing how one small event makes such a roshim, such an impact on our entire world. And we think about that, and we think about lehepech, what one bracha could do, what one chesed could do, what one tehillim can do, what one block gemara could do. It's fascinating because the koach is so much greater. So we have to remind ourselves of the koach of our actions. And really, when we're making brachos, we're bringing Hashem's shefa into our lives. So, one last idea, when you make a bracha, we say the word bore. So bore is present tense. Bore pri ha-doma, bore pri ha-eitz. Hashem is constantly in the act of creating. It's not as if Hashem made the apple, made the apricot, made the food, and then took a step back. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly with us, and He's guiding us through every single step. The avoda, one of the avodas during this time right now, is to find ourselves connecting to Hashem, to find how we can, in the upside down, topsy-turvy world that we're going through, is how we can find a way to connect ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And 100 connections a day is the idea of brachos. We have to really pause. We have to think about what we're saying and not just mitzvahs anoshim milimuda, that we just, you know, rattle them off like robots, like autopilot, like a habit. But we really have to stop and think about what we're saying. And Hashem should help us in that zechus of pausing and recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asking for His bracha that should give us shefa, bracha, hatzlacha, refuah shlema for Chol Beis Yisrael, everybody who needs healing. And that's the chus of us reciting our 100 brachos every day with kavana. Okay, shkoyach everybody. Thank you for. I know we overlapped. We started with the Pesach and then we went into the nightly shir, but we will now continue to daven our virtual Maariv.